Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we have Lewis Peitzman back on the show. He is a writer, a podcast host, and he is helping me break down the latest from In the City, The Valley, and Next Gen NYC. Those are our younger shows that are airing right now, and I haven't talked in depth about them in a minute. So I wanted to catch up on some of the stuff that we've missed in the latest episodes. You know, we're talking about these, you know, obviously as the Summer House scandal and interest dies down a little bit. I don't think it's going to completely die down, but, you know, it's dying down as interest in filming for season 11, of course, has never been higher because usually the show starts filming 4th of July weekend. That's what they've been doing. I don't know if they've been doing that the whole time or just for like the past, like, you know, 7 years or so, but that's been the schedule, 4th of July to basically Labor Day. And this is the first year in a really long time they did not start filming on the 4th of July weekend. You saw a bunch of Summer House people out in the Hamptons this weekend. Jesse, Carl, Kyle, I think KJ was out there. Bailey and Levi were out there. But that was not for filming. They have not started filming the season yet, or at least in a big way. They have not gone to the house yet. They were not staying at the house. They did not have their first party. You would have seen more evidence of that. And I think that some of the sleuthing that people have done is probably correct in terms of insinuating who is going to be back on the show, but it's not fully correct. But I expect filming to start this weekend. I expect a lot of people to be out at the house to have a first big party. So that'll be interesting to see. But, you know, I think that, you know, when Sierra, for example, was announced as the After Sun host, people figured that was going to get in the way of the Summer House schedule because they usually start July 4th. Well, they didn't start July 4th this year. And After Sun, I think, is officially done. I don't think there are any more episodes of After Sun for Love Island. So Sierra could theoretically be back in time for this weekend. We don't know her travel schedule. I'm not going to get that in depth. But, you know, Mia also was not out there this past weekend. Then Lindsay was with Gemma and Aaron Leashy from Roni with some kids and other moms elsewhere in the Hamptons. So I think this weekend will be the big kickoff from what I understand. But it was kind of thrilling to see so many of them out there. And, you know, they were also palling around with like other people from other reality shows, Southern Hospitality people, Ava from Next Gen NYC, who I feel like all signs point to her and Kyle at least like sort of maybe hooking up or seeing each other. I don't know. But they hang out a lot. Jesse was with them. Carl's with them. Kyle was also spotted canoodling with Sally Carson, and she confirmed it was that weekend. I think there was a big nylon event at the Surf Lodge, and that's why a lot of those people were out there for that event. So yeah, this is just a rambly get excited for Summer House filming content, I guess, to come through. But I also remember, like, a lot of the cast, like, they hold a lot of their content to post while the season's airing as those, you know, with their weekly dumps. And I'm guessing that's sort of like a production ask or a network ask, like not post too much from filming at the parties. I'm sure you'll see stuff from other people who attend the parties and when they go out to dinners and go out at night. But I don't expect we'll see much from the house, which is going to be a new house. That's why Kyle posted that sort of end of an era post on Instagram a couple weeks ago that made people think he was leaving the show. He's not leaving the show, but that was sort of to commemorate the long run they had in that house. So I don't know the exact group that's going to be there. I know some people. I know there are going to be some new people, but I don't know the full list. And there are some people who I still don't really know what their status are. And that's kind of intriguing and compelling. And I'm kind of excited to see what happens. And I hope we get Sierra back from Fiji ASAP. But yeah, that's it. That's about it about Summer House up top. You know, they have to turn this around pretty quickly every year, and I'm always impressed by it. You know, I feel like, especially because the interest in this season of Summer House was so high, they're still sort of like winding that down. And I don't know if it will completely wind down before season 11 starts filming, which is unusual. Yeah, it's going to bleed into each other, I think, with Summer House right now, and especially, you know, within the city existing too. Anyway, this is a very rambly intro. I'm very sorry. But keep listening for my chat with Lewis Peitzman, all about In the City, The Valley, and Next Gen NYC. Check out his podcast, Supporting Actresses, wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back a couple more times this week. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Lewis Peitzman. He is a return guest to the pod. He is a writer. He recaps various shows for Vulture throughout the year. And he's back on the show to talk In the City, The Valley, and Next Gen NYC. Lewis, thanks for being here. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great. We discussed off mic. It's a little bit hot.
We're surviving.
But we're survivors, I would say.
It's 100 degrees. And I don't know if listeners know that, like, most podcasters, I think, have to turn their AC off when they record in their homes because of the background noise, which I have to do. So I'm like, I'll be sweating by the end of this. I'll be shiny.
This is why podcasters are braver than the Marines. Like, people don't realize how much goes into it.
We put up with a lot to do our jobs. So let's start with In the City. I feel like this was by far the best episode of the season so far. I feel like it sort of activated things, and it kind of reminded me of like the Dallas trip on Real Housewives of Atlanta this current season, because it's just sort of like there's so much happening, and I feel like it's going to fuel the rest of the season. I don't know how much longer it's going to be, but like it felt good. It felt like they were figuring it out, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it was the first episode where I was like, okay, maybe this show has legs. Like, I mean, I have enjoyed parts of it previously, but I think that it's been tough. Like, I am so tired of anything Kyle and Amanda that I'm just like very turned off by that. I just like can't take it anymore. And then I think it's a really big cast. The cast is maybe too big. And I feel this way about Next Gen, which I know we're also going to talk about, but I was just like, I needed to see a group scene where everything kind of came together in a interesting way, which I feel like we finally got.
And where was it only Kyle, Amanda, Lindsay, Danielle, like really totally carrying it? Like they still carried this scene, but like everyone else chimed in ways that I was like, okay, like people are learning.
Well, everyone chimed in except maybe
not
did Andrea,
everyone, but more.
Did Andrea and Lexi say anything? Because I feel like they were just sitting there.
I'm not sure about if they really contributed much. We'll get to The Valley in a second, but like, do you feel like The Valley cast is too big, or do you not feel that way about them?
I don't know that The Valley cast is too big, but they're very fractured, obviously. It's a kind of a different problem. I feel like In the City, I mean, Summer House has a similar thing where they sort of overcast the show. And then as the season's going, you see who emerges as a main character. Mm-hmm. So you have like someone like Levi. Already forgot Levi's name, like last season, where it's like is like there and like technically a full-time cast member, but like basically ended up not on the show. It just happened to like most men who've been cast on Summer House. Like I think it just sort of naturally develops. And I feel like within the city, it's a really big cast. People like, sorry, Andrea and Lexi are just sort of fading to the background. And Katie DeLuca is like, I guess on the show, but
She's a friend of, and she's literally only there to give Amanda a friend, I think. But like, I do think that one of the things that In the City will have to figure out is like, they clearly, and I know this, like they, for a lot of the casting, like they wanted couples. They wanted people that were basically like a two for one. And like, sometimes that's great because sometimes you find a couple where both sides of the couple are good at this. And I think in the city case, a few of the couples, like one of the people in the couples, like really works, and the other one feels like they're just kind of there. And so I don't know how they figure that out, but I guess you don't need to make both people full-time cast members. And I think that the value of having like a full couple for every cast member is kind of like overrated.
Yeah. I mean, like obviously if you're in a relationship, we're going to be seeing both of those people at like group events, but like, I don't know that Yvonne's husband is someone that like I need to see much more of. I mean, Yvonne is a separate issue, but like there's a bunch of people on the show where I'm just like, I don't really know what they're doing there. And I feel like I don't know. Like I think Kenny is, despite my feelings about him early on, like working out as a cast member.
Very much.
I don't know if Whitney has star quality. It's not really working for me.
Yeah, just because you got out early on The Bachelor several years ago doesn't mean that you're gonna be a great Bravo star.
Yeah, I don't mind her being there. I just like I don't really need like solo scenes with Whitney.
Yeah, totally. I agree. I think there's a way to do it where they can be around, but they don't necessarily need to be full time cast members whose stories we're really following. So obviously we'll get to the dinner party, but like there were a couple sort of scene setting moments that happened before that. The boys meet up with Lindsay at the Garrett. And it's funny because at first with the Garrett, I was like, okay, why are we always fucking filming at this bar? I know it's Gavin's. but then I'm reframing it because I'm like, it's actually kind of fun if they can make it like a watering hole type place where like they all kind of come to hang out as a group. But essentially it's like they need Lindsay to come in to like do the Googling on Owen, Danielle's boyfriend. And I guess it's to get to the bottom of like the timeline on the divorce or when he got with Danielle. But you can see where this is going, where like, of course, it's going to get back to Danielle that the Googling was happening.
Well, if messy Gavin is there, it's always going to get back to whoever's involved. I don't know. Like, I feel like I don't understand the obsession with the timeline. I'm also triggered by the word timeline in a post summer house situation. Like, don't want to hear about a timeline ever again. But I don't know. Like, I just feel like this should be a sort of an easy thing to answer. And I feel like they did answer it in this episode. So I don't know. It just feels like a weird, there's like a lot of unspoken stuff happening. Like, how much was Owen being evasive about before? I wasn't entirely clear on like how much he was withholding and how much information wasn't available. And like, do we think that like, they're trying to find out like if he was with someone else when he got with Danielle.
Yeah.
And that should be easy enough to solve, I think.
But I think that Danielle and Owen aren't doing themselves any favors by not just saying, okay, we went on our first date or we first hooked up on this day and Owen called off his marriage or they separated on this day. You know, I agree. It shouldn't be that complicated, but it's funny because like this becomes a whole thing, obviously, at the dinner and like Danielle's upset that everyone's digging into him. But Danielle's the first person to bring this whole thing up on camera, which was like there was a blind item or something on Bravo and Cocktails about this whole situation. And she's the one that brought up how upset she was by it. And so I get sort of the follow up from kind of the rest of the table, which is like, OK, if you're so upset by it, just shut it down. Like, as you said, give us the easy answer. Because also, like, if you're going to be on this show, you gotta like be open about all parts of your life, especially parts that you're bringing up yourself on camera.
Yeah, I mean, Owen is someone else who does not need to be a full time cast member on this show. I do get all that. And I think also, like, I don't know. I just feel like this whole thing with Danielle, there's something unspoken here where it does seem like Lindsay is annoyed about her being on the show at all, which sort of came up in the fight. And so, like, the other part of it where Danielle's like, we don't have to share this with you. And, like, we don't sort of owe you this. And then Danielle defenders online being like, they don't owe anything. I find to be such a weird perspective on reality stars in general, because like, of course, like no one in real life, no one owes you this information about themselves. But if they're choosing to go on a show, then of course, like that is part of the agreement. That is like part of the bargain. You get the fame of being on reality TV, but you aren't allowed to be like, it's none of your business, because that's just like not an answer.
Especially if your other cast members, Kyle and Amanda, are basically sharing every single detail about the dissolution of their marriage. Lindsay's talking about how her and Turner didn't work out. You know, even Kenny and Whitney are talking about their relationship a lot. Like, if everybody else is also doing it, it kind of highlights the contrast and sort of highlights you not doing that and you not going there being that much more kind of unwelcome, you know?
Yeah, I do wonder, though, about someone like Gavin, because I have seen people online being like, I don't know about his personal life. Like, why is he on the show, like, being messy and not telling us about himself? And I do understand that perspective, but also, like, I enjoy a chaos agent. Like, I enjoy someone who's really just there to, like, be a bone collector and cause drama.
Totally.
So, like, yes, he seems like a really shitty friend. Like, he seems like he's not someone I would want to, like, share my secrets with. But I'm enjoying him. Like, I think he's fun.
Yeah, no, I think that I was not sure about Gavin either. To me, Gavin and Georgina are a little bit more like friend of vibes, where like maybe we'll get hints of their personal lives. But like, I'm with you. I don't need that from Gavin. I think that Gavin, like, he got things popping with Kenny and Whitney. He's getting things popping at this dinner table where he brings up the Kyle and Amanda argument over like, was Kyle's drinking a worse factor for their marriage than Amanda's smoking pot? And like that was sort of, and he brought that up. And like, that's partially why this episode was so good. That's partially why Yvonne and Nick's
third wedding dinner
resulted in such chaos. Like, it's, you know, you have to appreciate that.
You really do. It wouldn't have happened. He has like really good producer instincts.
Totally.
Like he's like making sure he's like constantly kind of like saying out loud what the crux of an argument is, like what the conflict is, and then being like, how do you feel about that? Like he's basically like, I feel like he's in a confessional with someone. He's like asking them.
He's the producer.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I feel like he really gets it. But yeah, Georgina, I totally forgot about until you brought her up, which is not a great sign. I do feel like with her, I don't think she's dating. So I don't think she's like holding back anything. I think she just doesn't have that to share. And I think this is also a problem that happens on The Valley where it's like, how much do these shows want to be about like, my kid is a dirty, dirty diaper or like, you know, parenting stuff. They're trying to kind of hit that demographic of like, of younger parents, but also they want to be about messy dating stuff. So I think it has this like, there's this sort of central conflict within shows like In the City in the Valley.
Yeah, I think so too. And I like Georgina's little parenting funny stories. Like they kind of actually stand out to me on the show. But I think that's a really kind of good role for her to play. And I don't like, if she's not dating, then great. Like let's just keep it sort of at that. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard. And BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. One way to close that gap and fight the stigma around mental health support is to be open about your own positive experience in seeking help, to encourage your loved ones to do the same and experience those same benefits. Because really, the numbers do speak for themselves. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists, making it the world's largest online therapy platform. It has served over 6 million people globally and boasts an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, which is based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. Lindsay and Kenny met up before this dinner, and like, I thought it was a really great scene. They talked about their relationship with their parents, and they'd previously really been like really adversarial with each other. But like, I kind of view them as like, obviously Lindsay's an incredible reality star. I think Kenny has the makings of a really good reality star. I think he also has like, he pops on camera and he's messy and he isn't afraid of conflict, and he's also open about his life. And like, I could see them having a really sort of great back and forth like love hate situation like over several seasons basically.
Totally.
I think that could be a really compelling setup for the show.
Yeah, my unpopular opinion about the Kenny finding his dad thing, people were like, oh, it was for the show, and it was like, you know, he was doing a storyline, and I was kind of like, I mean, he has good instincts then. Like he created a compelling storyline that made people who were so anti-Kenny be like, oh, I suddenly feel for him.
Sure.
Him having to sit down with Lindsay and talking about it. Like, Lindsay has always been really good at, you know, at key moments showing her vulnerable side, because she does seem, you know, she can be really harsh and she can be really cutting. And then she, like, lets you in a way where you're like, oh, she's a real person. She did that. So she's, like, doing that with Kenny, but also with the audience to remind us, like, that she is a, you know, a three-dimensional person and not just a reality icon.
Right, but also then did you post this on Threads where you're like, she does that, and then she also like kind of makes a statement about Carl that like a lot of people probably wouldn't agree with or something, where it was like,
I don't know if that was me, but I mean, I certainly agree with that.
Somebody said basically like Lindsay is really compelling because she can have this like really incredible moment where she talks about, you know, her mother abandoning them as kids and like kind of how that impacts her as a mother. And then also she'll say like, and Carl also abandoned me.
Right.
And like, it's a comment that I'm sure a lot of people would agree with, but also a lot of people would not agree with that. And I think that's kind of like why Lindsay and Kenny are both great, which is because like they can also like be like these lightning rods that people do not agree with. But then like the next episode, like you said, she'll have this really emotional moment that reminds you of like why you do love her.
I mean, Bravo fans have gotten too soft, I think.
I agree.
In terms of you don't have to always like or agree with what someone is doing on a reality show. I say that while acknowledging that, like, I'm not enjoying Amanda at all right now. Like, I just think that, like, whatever enjoyment I got out of Amanda in the past, like, that ship has sailed. So, like, there's a point at which someone, like, she's not, like, a fun villain to me. I don't want to see her on Summer House. I'm glad she won't be back. But I feel like with Lindsay, like, I often disagree with Lindsay, and that's fine. Like, that she's great TV. She's always great TV.
Yeah.
And I like her, even if I don't agree with her. And that's plenty for me. I don't need her to be perfect.
When it comes to the Amanda thing and not enjoying her, do you think it's just like a post-Wes Wilson scandal mindset that we all have? Do you think it's because like we're not getting the things on Summer House that we would get, which is like her in bed with Sierra and Paige and Mia, yeah, or like, you know, occasional actual fun moments with Kyle where they're like at a party together and like giving each other shit? Like, what do you attribute that to, do you think?
I mean, it's definitely just, I think a lot of it's fatigue from the scandal, for sure, and how overcovered it was. Was like, it just was too much. I think that, and also just like, she's just kind of miserable. Like, I just feel like, you know, her and Kyle, like when they're arguing, like at the dinner, the wedding party, the third wedding, like they're both wrong. You know, like I'm watching this and I'm like, I just think it's so clear that they were never going to get back together, that there was no saving this marriage. And so we're just kind of watching it fall apart in a way that it's not like fun to me. I can deal with like explosive drama. I just feel like they're both so unhappy in ways that I find off-putting. Like, what is the storyline? It's just,
there's
we're
no levity.
Just watching the, right. There's no levity and there's no resolution. And so we're just watching them fight and fight and fight until someone finally pulls the plug.
Right. Yvonne and Danielle dress conversation.
Yes. Yes.
Where did you land after the episode?
Okay. I think the photo that Danielle sent was misleading. I think that photo was very misleading.
It was oversaturated, right?
Because it was oversaturated.
That plant in the background lime green.
The tell of the plant in the background. And also, if you're texting a bride to be like, is my dress okay? Your dress is not okay. Unfortunately for Yvonne, like, once you say love, like, it's sort of, you can't complain about it. Like, yes, it was Danielle sort of like pulled a fast one on her, but she gave the go ahead. So I think she can't complain about it. I'm really intrigued by Yvonne because I like her. Like, I enjoy her presence. She seems fun. She's like a person that I would like want to hang
She's
out
great
with.
Great dry humor. Yeah.
But I think it's tough on a show like this when you have a personality like Lindsay, like Kenny, who's emerging that way, like Kyle, who's so big, and there's such a big cast. Like, I do feel like Yvonne's getting lost. And so when she's trying to kind of like reclaim her wedding party, it was like a little bit sad to me because I was like, yeah, but we enjoyed this more because it wasn't about you.
I think that with Yvonne, there's more to her that she needs to show on the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, clearly a lot of this cast has needed sort of like a slow build to figure out sort of like how to be on camera. And I'm hoping that like from this point forward, we see like the fruits of that waiting period, basically. But I agree. Like, I even think that like her, like kind of bring it all back to herself, like it's not even, didn't really feel like her. It sort of felt like maybe like the producers wanting her to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like her having this conflict with Lindsay, like, I just don't entirely believe it. Like, I just feel like if you're that close to like Lindsay Hubbard, like you've probably had other moments where she pulled focus. And that's like part of the package deal to me. Like, that's why you have a friend who's that like dynamic, and you know, she's a star. Like, you have a person like that in your life, you understand that sometimes she's going to pull focus. So like Yvonne being like, why did you like make this not about me? It just feels a little bit like, I don't totally buy that she's that upset about it.
Right. Yeah. The dress thing, it's hard because I wish Yvonne had not responded, love, like, go for it. But also, like, the picture does seem way pinker. Like, the dress looks white on camera.
I know. I do sort of want, like, at the reunion, some sort of forensic analysis of that photo to prove that Danielle changed the color, because I don't believe that it was.
I think that the picture that she texted, I kind of think that none of them realized that the saturation was up until viewers spotted the plant in the background.
Yeah.
So I think that might be have to play out on social media or something, or a Watch What Happens Live appearance. Yeah, I feel like that's most of in the city. I do think that Lindsay sort of breaking the fourth wall and being like, then why are you here, to Danielle? Yeah, like that, I'm so glad they kept that in. I think that that is, as your colleague Brian Boylan always says, so many fights are about the show, and it does inform so much of what we've seen so far this season when it comes to Danielle Lindsay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that early on, like, I know the show hasn't been on that long, but in the first like two episodes with Lindsay's reluctance to like sit down with Danielle, to me it was like, I don't want her on the show. I don't want to like, it's less about like the friendship and more about like, I don't want to invite her back into this world. And I think that like, I like Danielle sometimes, other times not so much. I think she's good on TV. She is a personality that I enjoy. But like, I also think that Lindsay has very valid reasons for not wanting to keep doing the dance with Danielle that she always does. Like, it's the same thing over and over
again. There's a lot there. There's a lot there. I don't know how much will come up, but there's a lot there. And I think that, like, it is a thing with Danielle where it's like, especially in a huge cast full of people who don't have experience on reality TV, like, Danielle does stand out because, I mean, she was the point of a lot of that conflict at that dinner. Again, one of the best episode we got in this season. Yeah. And, like, it points to there being valid reasons for her to be there just for entertainment purposes alone. And so that's how I see it. And my last question for you, do you agree with Danielle that Lindsay only wants her as a friend when she is like, wants to basically be her lapdog and like support her and not criticize her?
I don't know, because I feel like Lindsay deals with, I feel like Yvonne comes for Lindsay in like smaller ways or be like, why are you dating this guy? You know, what are you actually looking for? Like, I do feel like a real friend Lindsay will take it from. I think Danielle always takes it too far. She's her own worst enemy. She's had like Danielle and Winterhouse should be studied for like the most embarrassing performances.
One of the worst Bravo seasons in the last 5 years, for sure.
Totally. That was a true nightmare. I think that there's maybe some truth to it, and that like Danielle for a while was just like there to support Lindsay and not say anything really. And that was how she stuck around for so long. But I don't think that's like Lindsay's main problem. I think Danielle sabotages herself and also like Lindsay when she gets bored or when she's like in crisis, which happens often enough.
It's also like if you aren't close off camera and then like every time you do come on camera, you're coming for somebody, then it's like, okay, like you can't like say that I'm your best friend, but then also come for me and not talk. And like, we don't really hang out outside of filming. So like, that's sort of what I take from it. But yeah, I'm hopeful for the rest of the season of In the City.
It's a short season, right? There's not that many more
I'm
episodes.
Pretty sure it's like 9 or 10, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And it's I think a 1 or 2 part reunion. You know, the show will get a second season. There's no question in my mind. Like it's the Summer House effect. And I'm glad they're going to get time to figure it out, because like a show about people in New York in their 30s and 40s, like I want to watch that show. And I just think that they can figure out the cast in a way that works, I think, going forward.
I would just say that it should be not additive. Like, don't add more people, just cut the dead weight. I think that they have a habit of trying to do, they always want to add for a new season. And like, if someone naturally joins, whatever. But I just think like, there's too many people you can get rid of. I'm so sorry, Andrea and Lexi. You can probably demote Georgina and Gavin to friends up. Like, there's ways to just cut this down.
The last question about that for you, because I kind of feel like Bravo's biding their time for Summer House to film, see what the temperature is like around the show and the scandal in a couple months. If West and Amanda are still dating at the end of August,
and
the city's gearing up to start filming, would you want to see them on there together? Do you think that's going to happen? What's your read on that?
Good question. I don't personally want to see it. I think that the problem with West is that like he has no credibility left. Like it's not even like he's shitty to women. Like he is, but like the problem is that like I don't trust anything he says. Like he has lost all credibility. We're like,
yeah, totally.
What kind of arc can we get from him at this point that we wouldn't just assume is bullshit? And so I think that it's very hard to kind of see him on a show again and care about him at all. And he's not even like someone who is a good villain, because he just like shrinks down and shuts up when he's in conflict.
Yeah.
So like, I think that it would be probably smart for them to keep Amanda around in some way, especially if she is in a better place when they film again. Like if she's not, she was just such a mess.
Such a shell. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not. And like, that's not fun to watch. Like if she's in a different place and like she and Kyle have real shit to work through as like people getting a divorce, then like, I'm not totally opposed to it.
Me neither.
But like, we can't, I don't know. I just feel like,
It's hard.
Like, I just like, what is there? That storyline is so dead. It's really tough because as Bravo, you know, as our production in this case, like, of course you see the ratings and you're like, how do we extend this? And Vanderpump Rules learned the hard way that like, you don't, you just like can't, there's no more story there. There was no moving forward for Ariana and Sandoval. But like, I don't know, like, Kyle and Amanda have a real relationship that will continue. But like, is there more with Amanda and Wes? I don't think so.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why I'm like, do not put Miha in Summer House. Like, we don't want to be defined.
Oh,
we don't want this whole show and ecosystem to be defined by this scandal. And like, also, it's hard to imagine. Wes kept calling, I think in two different places, he said like it's like a timeout from for him. It's just hard to imagine that like Bravo is also not just like pissed at him and production's not pissed at him.
I'm sure
for going
I'm
on
sure
for going to do the doing the whiteboard thing, talking on his podcast.
Totally.
He's just shutting down on camera. Like at the end of the day, it's just sort of like he's also pissed off so many people that really, really matter and make those decisions.
I think that's true, but like I do think Bravo doesn't ever fire anyone forever. And like you have to really like you can sue the network and still come back. Like I just feel like there's
I agree, but it's been three it would have been 3 months, just the summer.
Totally. Oh yeah. No, I mean him getting fired from Summer House for the season like absolutely makes sense. I think that it's unlikely he will be on In the City next season. But I mean, never say never. I do think there's Bravo putting this on pause is annoying because it's usually just, you know, a BS way of saying canceled. But like they do bring stuff back. They bring cast members back. They really just kind of see the temperature. And I think if they feel like enough time has passed and people want to see Wes again, they'll bring him back.
Right. It's like I can imagine a world in which, you know, they have this season. They have this season of Summer House where they have some of the OGs coming back. Sierra will make appearances. Put them all permanently in the city the next go round. I could see them putting an Amanda and Wes drop in Summer House for season 12. That's sort of what I have my.
It could happen. I mean, I also am just like, Summer House is a real question mark for me, but I agree with you. Please don't add Miha. I saw a post today where it was like, she lost her job. They should add her to Summer House. And it's like, that's
we don't
not.
Give pity invites to a reality
we don't
show
give
because
pity
you lost
invites,
a real job.
She wants it too much. Like, and Sierra won't be there enough, it seems, for her to have a connection. And also, their connection is based on...
Also, all they do is be talking about Wes. Like, I don't
talking about
that.
Wes, and it's like, they were talking about how they really wanted to hang out, but it was all about, like, out of spite, which is just like, they both need to, like, move on from Wes, and we need to move on from Wes.
Yes. All right, let's move on ourselves to the finale. We pick back up, we're in Puerto Vallarta, and... You and I are both usually like sort of Janet apologists. Like we kind of we see her reasoning in a lot of situations, and so I know that's going to probably piss off a lot of people listening, and I'm okay
with
that.
That's
fine. I think the one thing I will say that I'm having trouble with Janet, she does need to stop running away from conversations and scenes. And the other thing is her texting Brittany in real time about what they were saying. That's where she doesn't really do herself any favors, because I'm like,
totally,
she should have just waited till I got back to the hotel, kikied with Brittany in her room, and then told her. She didn't need to like send the warning text, basically
the warning that was like, it's so bad, you guys,
right?
Like,
exactly.
I mean,
that's where it's like, Janet, like, or the other thing that comes to mind is at the Vegas party at Schwartz's when she was like, the Charles Manson comment that she made.
Totally.
I was like, that's just like the wrong example, you know.
Exactly. But I also, like, when I saw that in the preview for that episode, I was like, I can't help but love that she is her own worst enemy. Like, that
totally.
She
shoots herself
always,
in the foot all the time.
But, like, it's not that I always
but
agree with her.
Ultimately,
again,
she's right.
I don't have to, like, always agree with a reality star. I think what frustrates me is that Janet is not the one perpetuating the Danny thing at this point. Danny's behavior is what's perpetuating this conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, Janet's also right that, like, and Michelle pointed this out, that, like, everyone has a problem with Danny, but no one's saying it. Brittany also does not like Nia or Danny and won't just say that. And so, like, I think Janet gets a lot of the blame, but, like, there's... Lala is not into these people. Michelle is not into these people. Brittany is definitely not into these people and talks a lot of shit about them. And, like, that's totally fair. And I also thought that, like, it was right for Janet to tattle about that because, like, it was really messed up for Kristen to be like, these people all have drinking problems. However, the editors really were like, it was a really big, like, fuck you to Brittany to make sure they included how wasted she was. Because, like, she's, like, crying about Kristen calling her drunk. And she is, like, incoherent at that bar. Which was
absolutely
a beautiful touch. But, yeah, I mean, the Kristen thing is weird, too. Because I think the unspoken thing, well, that's spoken, Jasmine and Janet being, like, Kristen is not friends with these people. She's, like, ride or die for these people she never sees outside of filming.
So what's the deal? Is it just that much anti-Janet sentiment? Like, why do you think that Kristen is, like, quadrupling down on this hill? Like, even in the after show, she's going for it. It's, like, really wild.
Yeah.
To throw Brittany and Zach and Jasmine all under the bus to save face for Danny is pretty wild.
I do think there's, like, some deeper psychological stuff going on here. I think Kristen feels very linked to Nia because of when they had their kids, that like there's some sort of like loyalty happening there.
That's fair.
I also think that Kristen has a persecution complex because she was so ostracized on Vanderpump Rules. Like, I just think about like her and Stassi and Katie and how she would get kind of pushed out of that trio and how she was often just like treated like she was crazy and like because she was acting crazy, but she was also right about like everything. Or she was right about a lot of things. At least she was right about Sandoval and Miami Girl. She was right about Sandoval and Ariana. Like, and she was treated like she was crazy. And so I think that she just like gets it in her head that like there's a witch hunt happening in this case about Danny, and she has to be the one to like defend them. But, like, Danny's a nightmare, and I think that everyone can see that. I kept thinking about on the party bus when he was being a toddler and, like, you know, just the worst in that party bus. Like, Lacey and Jesse are sitting right there. Like, they hear all of this. Like, they hear how insane he's being. The pretense that, like, that they have to defend him, that he's worthy of defense, is ridiculous. And Nia, I think, winds him up on purpose, which is, like, another thing that I think is not being talked about, that she, for whatever reason, like, turns him into that by being like, and not to defend how he talks to her, but I mean how he talks to everyone else, her being like, you can't dance because people are uncomfortable, was designed to trigger
him. It's the same thing, she kind of the same gene that she has when they were at in San Diego, Santa Barbara, wherever they were, at the roller coaster at the amusement park, and she was like, hold my hand, like, let's have fun. And like, she's so obsessed with how things come across, she's so obsessed with image, and like her saying these things to him when he's been drinking it, that is just not a good combination. And like, she does know he's not going to react well to that, but she also can't help herself because she's so obsessed with the image. It's the pageant queen coming out. And like, I agree, he treated her like shit in the back of that van. And it just, it also just goes to show it's not about him drinking, one. It's about how he acts when he drinks. And it's also not only like how he treats other people, it's how he treats Nia. It's like, it's not just like overstepping in terms of like maybe like being too sexual and like maybe touching people unwantedly, but like, it's also just like how he treats his wife every single fucking time he drinks. It's happened almost every episode at this point. It's like totally really shocking.
Yeah, I think like, it's weird how Nia is making it in her confessionals about, you know, when she was like, well, Jesse was really sexual with Jason and like that was inappropriate and no one said anything. And it was like, if Danny, like Danny's, she keeps using the word uncomfortable to refer to, sexual indiscretion, which obviously what he did to Jasmine and Melissa was like completely inappropriate. And we talked about that. But like, Lala was uncomfortable because of how he was talking to Nia. That was what made Lala step in. It was not about that he was being too flirty or handsy. It was entirely about he was being verbally abusive to his wife. And he does that all the time. Like, that is where the discomfort comes in. So I feel like Nia and Danny are like making it all about the drinking and all about like the bad touching. And it's clearly about his anger and how inappropriate he is. And in that way, and even Janet was like, drink all you want. Just like, don't be weird. It's like, he's just really weird. He's really
weird,
unpleasant.
Bad drunk. Him making comments about Michelle's dancing because Nia told him that he shouldn't be shaking his hands. Like, it's just gross. Like, it's just the way that he like just deflects at every fucking turn, and the way that Nia deflects on his behalf, it's, and the way that Kristen is deflecting on their behalf, it's really just, it kind of like really grosses me out. And it's like, I don't know. I just really, really don't like it. And like, now there's this whole thing emerging in the past several episodes about, you know, Jesse and Danny think that Brittany was part of like a planned Danny takedown that Jax planned. And it's like, this is just such a stretch to me. I feel
it is a stretch. However, I don't think Brittany is entirely innocent. I think Jax is an unreliable narrator, so like, don't take what Jax says. But I do think that like, there has been the subtext of like, Brittany does not like the Bookos, and for whatever reason, she wants to be everyone's friend. She's not going to actually say it, but like, she has never liked Nia. She has never liked Danny. And so I feel like, even if she wasn't part of a plot to take them down, I don't think she was doing anything to stop Jax from doing that. I think that she was happy to have Jax expose them for being, you know,
yeah, that's a good read on
kind
it.
Of awful. So I just think, willfully ignorant. Like, yes, willfully ignorant. I don't know. I just like, I think that like that them trying to make Brittany like the villain here is kind of silly, but also Brittany does skate by a lot.
I think if you really want to put Brittany in the hot seat, I think the way to do it is her not not taking a side on Janet and Kristen more often, or not at least like yeah. speaking her mind. And also, as you said earlier, just not like saying, I don't like Nia and Danny. Just admitting that.
Yeah.
Like that's where you want to get. That's where you want to put her on the hot seat for me.
And I understand like she doesn't want to get in between, you know, the whatever, because she likes to kind of ride the fence, which I understand. As a Libra, I get it. But I think like I do like sometimes want to ask the rest of them, like, what is your issue with Janet? Because I think like Janet being annoying is one thing. Like, sure, Janet can be very annoying, but like, are we really just fixated on her using the term sexual assault, which she has apologized for that. She's apologized for the fact that she, you know, sort of used Jasmine and Melissa's trauma for her own aims. Mm-hmm. She apologized that she wasn't doing it for the right reasons. Like all of it, she's saying that she was lashing out. She was triggered. She lashed out in a way she shouldn't have. Like she has apologized for all of that. So at this point, I'm not really sure what they're looking for from her. I guess to not say things like the Charles Manson thing. But, like, that to me is more just, like, her being kind of dramatic and not, like, a serious infraction.
I think that they're looking for her to leave the show. That's what they want her to do.
Right.
And
but, like,
I think it's funny you mentioned Kristen's persecution complex, which I agree with. But, like, what's been happening to Janet for the past 3 seasons?
Totally.
You know? And, like, Kristen has no problem with it. So, it's, they want her off the show, but she's such a lightning rod that she shouldn't be going anywhere.
I think that Danny and Nia will be off the show next season.
They should be.
And I think that that will happen before Janet will be off the show. Janet, like, she's a very, very divisive person. Mm-hmm. It's been fun online to watch people kind of be more fan of this season, where they're like, that they're like, she's there for a reason. We like her, whatever. I don't have to like her all the time. I think she's good for the show. And I think that, like, as annoying as it is to say this, I do think that Janet does have a moral compass in a way that not all these cast members do, where I feel like, you know, in terms of her politics and her overall opinions on things, I just feel like she has a good head on her shoulders. And like her being really annoying does not take away from that for me. I appreciate her being there.
I actually think that moral compass like gets in her way sometimes. Like it's almost like that's like why she is the way she is and like why she can't help herself. Because sometimes sometimes I want to be like Janet, just like
I know you totally
relax,
just yeah,
you
know? Shit, just
can't,
move
she
on
can't help herself.
It's hard because when she was like, I can't apologize to Danny, I'm like, I get, you have to, like, you just have to kind of do it and move on. But I also understand, like, his behavior in this episode was so repulsive to me, like you were saying, with, like, him sort of, like, using that language of discomfort and, like, slut-shaming, but also in a way where he was like, oh, I'm so uncomfortable, to make fun of people who are uncomfortable about the things that he's done, to kind of, like, constantly use that, the trigger thing with Lala, where it's like, you can think those terms are overused, but, like, they're coming from a real place of, like, you're being disgusting and, like, a repulsive man, and there's a reason why people are reacting to you this way. I just, like, can't imagine looking at that man and wanting to say sorry for anything.
I mean, the way that you described him, it's very Trumpy, so... Like it's very that. I'm just gonna say that.
It is very Trumpy. I think that, like, yeah, I really don't know. I can't imagine that, like, Danny and Nia watched this season and think the show is good for them. But also,
I mean, he pulled out of Watch Happens Live.
I know. But then I'm also like, where is their income coming from? His acting gigs?
Good question. That is the catch 22 of being on reality TV.
I know. And I think about this a lot in terms of these shows with, like, big casts, all these newer reality shows where I'm like, these people are not famous enough to make livings as influencers forever. Like, they could get some deals for a while, but, like, if you have that many kids and you, like, even in Santa Clarita, which don't get me started on that, I'm from SoCal and I have a lot of thoughts about moving to Santa Clarita. Beyond that, like, I just feel like they need the show because what are they going to do?
I agree. He can't be doing that many acting jobs, even though allegedly one job is what forced him to pull out of Watch What Happens Live.
I really hope that Andy will ask him about that, I'm sure, at the reunion.
I really hope so. But Andy also, like, backed it up the next episode of Watch What Happens Live. He was like, he had a job. And it's like, yeah, he probably told everybody he had a job. That was such convenient timing. It's ridiculous. Yeah. The other thing that's part of this episode, sort of this couple-pronged thing of, like, Michelle having an issue with Jesse showing affection with Lacey because he never showed her affection. I'm actually really on Jesse and Lacey's side of this because I'm like,
interesting.
Michelle had her boyfriend around all last season.
Yeah.
They were affectionate. I kind of think she can't really speak to that. I understand the feeling, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that her bringing it up as, like, another issue with Jesse after, like, they keep on getting to, like, a good place and then one of them brings something up about the other.
Yeah.
You're in a good place. They're able to travel together. Lacey's there, who I kind of love. Like, let's
love
just,
Lacey.
Like,
I love Lacey, but I do think she is not as innocent as she seems. Like, she's always seems like she's like really chill and she's like willing to move on with everyone. But then in the confessional,
there
she's like admitting that she like actually agrees with Jesse about all the bad shit he's saying. So I think I like her though a lot. I think she should like keep being on the show.
She's like so. The thing is, like, I love when she checks him, but it happens so often. And like, she's so often like the quote unquote right side of history in the scenes. And I'm like, she's playing to the camera and the audience.
Totally.
They go back
to their room and she's like, by the way, I loved when you like said this nasty shit to Michelle or whatever.
But then she's also like, get off the Britney train. And it's like, that's correct. That's the correct advice.
No, I think she's very savvy. I hear you on the Michelle thing. And I do not miss the honeyman. Like, she's having a great season. I'll like give her that it's not an entirely rational response. Like, I don't think that she was making it a huge deal. I feel like she was at the gay bar later, mm-hmm. she was upset about it, but she wasn't like talking to Jesse about it. You know, she was venting to Schwartz about it, which I think was totally fine. And also I loved her being like, how would you feel if Katie was like, you know, making out someone in front of you? And Schwartz was like, I would love it. Cause it's just like, I think Schwartz and Katie were roommates for like a decade, basically.
Right.
So I don't think it was actually an issue. But yeah, I mean, I think Jesse is sort of right about that. But I also feel like she's not making a big enough deal about it for it to bother me.
Yeah, that's totally fair. All right. Last show to talk about, Next Gen NYC.
Yes.
We're two episodes in. For some reason, they've both been supersized, which I think is
because there's 30 cast members and they have to service
that's
all
true.
Of them.
That's
so
true.
I have not
been watching the after show of Next Gen NYC yet. I'm not there yet. I have to like wean off some other stuff first.
That's a huge time commitment.
I mean, they're like 30 minutes though.
30 minutes, but plus like an hour of an episode. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
It's
another episode of a show. I'm like, I can't, I have not done the after show
yet.
Okay. I really like this show. I'm enjoying the season so far. My one production note, they use the texting a lot.
Uh-huh.
And like, it's a lot of reading that you have to do kind of quickly. Like, things will pop up. And I'm like, wait, who's talking to each other right now? You know, it's like, I'm still getting my bearings on like the new group dynamic. And so to have these texts pop up that are supposed to be indicative of that dynamic, it's a lot. And I think that it's too much. What do you think?
I agree.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I mean, after the first episode came out, I heard a lot of people saying that it was too frenetic for them. The pacing was just too much. And I was like,
it's fast.
I don't know if I felt that way because I was so excited to be back with these cast members. Like, I loved the first season. So I was just like happy they were back. But then watching the second episode, I was like, okay, you're onto something. There's too much going on here. It's too fast. There's too many texts. And I think that again, the problem is that the cast is too big. Like, I really feel like that is a problem that ends up kind of affecting these production choices because they're trying to cover too much mm-hmm. at the same time. It's also a show where like cast members bring their people they're dating. They bring their friends to things. Like, Georgia's gay friend has been with her the entire time.
Yes.
And then also her boyfriend. And I'm just like, that's a lot of extra people there all the time. And I don't know that we need that. Plus they added more cast members to a show that was already pretty overstuffed.
And Liam sat down with two other friends that and one of them is Spike Lee's son.
And I mean, this is like, I'm basing this on Wikipedia, so like, don't take my word for it.
Okay.
But like, I believe that Kendall is a friend of, and I don't think that Spike Lee's son is.
Oh, interesting. But he was doing a lot of talking in that. He was explained more in that scene, I feel like.
He was, but I think he's not going to get confessionals.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but
I mean, what it's really giving is that, like, at the beginning of this season, they were trying out a bunch of new people and
totally.
Seeing who
yeah.
was really going to stick. Clearly, Rowan sticks, who we are introduced to Brooke Shields' daughter. I actually like her vibe. I think she's, again,
it's
another big new person, so it's just another person to learn, but, like, I was kind of into her, I guess. Like, I'll see where it goes. I'm kind of obsessed with Ava and Gia. We kind of kicked back off with their little fight at the Amira's birthday party. First of all, the first two big events are both Amira events. Just like, she's kind of giving main character on this season, honestly.
She was underused last season. She was too busy.
And now they're really leaning into her. But I kind of love how Ava and Gia are fighting over whether or not Teresa actually followed and then unfollowed Ava.
Which, like, she obviously did.
She obviously did. And, like, she probably doesn't know how to use her phone. But, like, she was like, "Why? Who has screenshots of this kind of stuff?" And it's like, well, I don't know. Like, somebody who's on a reality show who wants to make a little point of contention who doesn't like you. Like, I kind of like how locked in Ava is considering how, like, checked out she was the first season.
I still feel like Ava thinks she's above the show. She has a little bit of an air of superiority. I think like leading like to that to be though. A villain. I like it. I like yeah, exactly. it when she's like, I think that she should really like tap into that side of herself. Mm-hmm. I think that Gia's problem has always been that she wants to be the hero. And like mm-hmm. she, you know, she and Teresa both feel like they're always right. And like, it's more fun to be the villain sometimes. I feel like Gia and Ava could both play villain in these moments and it would be very entertaining. Like, I'm actually fine with that.
And I don't dislike Gia by any means, but when she showed a lot of Teresa-esque qualities, yeah. I do have a hard time sometimes, you know?
Totally, yeah.
But I also believe that, like even just, like, her and Ariana having, like, the post-party sit-down in the morning in her apartment, I was like, she seems like actually is a good friend. Like, if she really wants to be a good friend, Gia does seem like, you know, a good person. It's funny because now we have, like, I want to say four people vying for Ariana's affection right now.
Yeah.
Hudson wants to get her back. Liam's into her. Charlie is, like, peripherally into her as well.
Yeah.
Shy is into her. She's the reason for the season. Like, she's the it girl, and they all want,
I know.
They all want to go
and
out
then
with her.
And then Brielle was there, and I was like, are we, like, adding another
Brielle's just trying to get any screen time. She's sad she didn't get her own show.
She's
you know?
So beautiful, though. I was just like, oh, Brielle. I mean, good for her. She was sort of the breakout star, though, of last season, right?
Very
like, she was the one who it was like, I feel like...
She made the show.
But yeah, by the end, we sort of got more into Georgia, I think, was sort of a breakout. And then Charlie just being so awful was like, people mm-hmm. loved how he was just like an unrepentant villain. But I feel like Ariana was the biggest surprise because everyone was like, "What? Who is this person?" Like, mm-hmm. people have such a bad opinion of Kim, you know, of like of that marriage. And it's just like, it's so, don't want to touch it with any, you know, whatever. It's bad. But then, like, Ariana was this, like, ray of light and, like, mm-hmm. was a perfect entry point for the show in that she yeah. moved to New York and she was, like, a good, you know, she's sort of what they were trying with, like, Ashley on Rhode Island, but, like, didn't entirely work of, like, a true outsider coming into this world as an audience surrogate.
Totally. And, like, she's, yeah, there's, like, nothing I don't like about Ariana, to be honest. And, like,
yeah,
I mean, Rent Free is her reveal in, like, the first episode, I think, of last season that Kim was stealing her money. Like, that is, that will, I'll never forget that for as long as I live. Do you think, as some of the cast thinks, that her breakup with Hudson is for the show?
No, I actually don't. I think that, like, I mean, I think that she could pull it off. I don't think he could pull it off. I don't think he has the acting ability. He seems genuinely upset. I don't think he has the kind of, like, reality background where I believe he could do a storyline like that. I do have faith that she could. But I think with him, it's like he's upset. And I also feel like it seemed like it was, I mean, they're together now, it seems. So like it felt like more of a break than like a real breakup.
Right. But it's like she moved out of the apartment. Like that's pretty intense. Like that's, you don't do that
if I were an influencer and could have like people like white glove service paid for, then I would also move more. So
that's true. You know? That is true. That touche. We also, she reveals that Charlie asked Hudson, whose dad is a billionaire, for $1 million investment in his new club bar idea, which he is working on with Omar, Georgia's ex, and it's actually originally Georgia's idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to follow. But $1 million?
I mean, it's chump change to Hudson's dad. Like, I mean...
But who believes in Charlie as an entrepreneur? I'm sorry.
Well, no one. And I just like, Charlie would have left the show if he could have afforded to leave the show because like nothing good is coming to him. Nothing good is coming to Charlie from this show beyond the paycheck. Like reputation wise, the show is not good for him. But
yeah,
well,
it's funny because I didn't. Okay, so last summer there was a DirecTV party that was like all these Bravo stars were there. And they either had just been renewed for a second season or like it was clearly going to, but it hadn't. They had not started filming or anything. And Georgia was there. She was leaving. She must have been with her gay best friend, honestly. Like that's probably who she was with. And I was like, Georgia, loved the first season. You need to make sure Charlie comes back to the show because you guys need the villain. I know we don't like him, but you guys need him. You know, I said this to her. I had no idea that he was like hanging out with her ex.
Yeah.
And, like, and they had all this bad blood. But there's just something about Charlie that I'm like, I'm glad he's there because he's such like an enigma, like such an easy person to like, just like not like, but like still be there and kind of be the punching bag. But I kind of also sense that he's sort of he's going to make inroads with this group again, you know?
Oh,
and
for
Ariana,
sure.
And Ariana's that, yeah, that sort of olive branch, it seems, which is kind of random.
It helps that they have, that they all, not all of them, but many of them come from this reality TV pedigree where, like, they know how to, like, move story along and they know how to go along to get along. You sort of just, like, get along to go along. You, like, make up with people so the show keep moving. And I think that, like, they mostly get that. Like, you know, Gia and Ava could have stretched this out, but they're fine by episode two. I mean, they don't like each other, but they're fine by episode two. Like, they just, like, move on, you know? So I think, like, they're gonna, like, they can be mad at Charlie, but they're gonna keep filming with him. So, like, they have to kind of get over it.
I hope that Charlie's right, that Brooks is, like, finding his voice a little bit more on the show in terms of, like, actually speaking up, because, you know, he was also kind of one of, like, the central characters on the show the first season. It doesn't really, I mean, he kind of is this season, but not as much, I don't think.
Yeah.
And part of that to me is that, like, for as long as he's been around reality TV via his mom, like, he does kind of shy away in the heat of the moment, in the group scenes. Like, even at the end, he, like, couldn't really speak about Ariana and Charlie, conversating. Like, so I kind of hope that he can step in a little more, because I think that, like, he should.
Yeah, I did. I have to say, like last season, I did enjoy the way that he was, like, I related to his, like, inability to handle conflict. So, like, sure, it was funny to watch him in group scenes, like, totally just, like, wilt and, like, hide. But yeah, it doesn't make a good reality star long term. You have to be able to kind of, like, to hang. And I think, like, again, to mention Ashley on Rhode Island, like, you have to be able to, like, you can have a season of that, but you have to like, step up and, like, be part of the conflict and, like, part of the drama.
Or production just needs to sort of reposition you in the group. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be the leader of a group, then you really can't be that way, sort of thing. But, like, if he wants to just sort of be a connector and, like, somebody who's there for sort of the fun, funny side comments, and I'm totally there for that. But I think that, like, yeah, that's sort of my perspective on that, I feel like. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, like, overall, I've said the show is too big, the cast is too big, but there's no one that I, like, want to get rid of necessarily. I'm just sort of like, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of peripheral characters who are not cast members. It's just a lot. It's, like, a lot to keep track of. And I think, like, then you have people who are, like, you know, Riley not even being there for the first episode was tough, where I'm like, you know, Gia being in Jersey. Like, there's just a lot of, like, elements where I'm like, you have to kind of, like, be an actual cohesive group. And that's hard with this many people.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of, like, their interpersonal conflicts, it's just, like, it's too many people to juggle.
And I think it's interesting thinking about, like, In the City and Next Gen NYC and, like, how they both are coexisting in the Bravoverse in New York City, different age groups.
Yeah.
Like, not that different, you know? It's, like, it's interesting, and they're both kind of facing similar issues, I guess, but I do think that actually the Next Gen NYC has a deeper stable of people that, like, are promising reality stars, but I do agree there's still too many people there.
And I also wonder, like, how much, because it feels like now that they're sort of established outside of their famous parents, although Brooke Shields, I'm sure, you know, Andy wants to have Brooke Shields on as much as possible. I know he's not, like, running the show, but that's very Andy to be like, oh my God, Brooke Shields' daughter. But, like, I think that I'm curious to see how much they go back to the well of parent stuff. Like, are we ever going to get a Kim and Candy sit down on Next Gen? You know what I mean? Like,
love that.
Are they, but, like, do they have enough faith in these cast members they don't want to go there, like, yet? Or are they going to kind of keep coming back to that? Because I feel like, you know, for a while, this was the only thing the only Teresa we got was through Next Gen. You know, now we're getting Jersey back. But I just wonder if that's going to be more of a thing, or if we've sort of moved on from who their parents are.
For me personally, I would like to keep that as an element of the show. I feel like it really, it's still a reason why we're watching them.
Yeah.
And I also just think that there's any time you can, like, accentuate a crossover moment for, like, a newer show, it's helpful.
Yeah. I really loved Candy last season. Like, I miss Candy so much on Atlanta. And I just feel like anytime I can get Candy, like, also, I'm in favor of that. It just adds another element of, like, this overstuffed show. Plus we have the parents to think about. Like,
I don't think
you
should define it, but it's like, I don't think we need, like, Seth Marks sitting down with whoever who do you sit down with? Charlie?
Whatever. Charlie.
Like, we don't need that to happen.
He was
again.
Like, kind of hitting on Charlie.
But
it
if they want to, like, have, like, a mother daughter lunch once a season, or, like, you know, go to Meredith's apartment or whatever and shoot the shit, like, I'm good with that. But I hear you.
I do wonder if Damon Dash will be on the show again after Ava called him out for not paying his rent.
I mean, he's the I remember when the bankruptcy thing popped up, I was like, they better fucking talk about that on the show. First episode. Yeah. I was like, good for you, Ava. Talk about it. I think her mom, Rachel Roy, is going to be on it. Becky with the good hair. Or nice. rumored to be Becky with the good hair.
Yeah, allegedly.
Rumor. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Well, Lewis, has been great. Thanks for bopping around the Bravaverse with me today.
That's a pleasure.
And I always like checking for your opinion because it keeps me sane, I think.
Thank you. I try.
Are you currently recapping anything for Vulture? Anything you want to plug before we sign off?
I'm not currently recapping unless Brian lets me when he's off. I do have a podcast called Supporting Actresses where we're covering the season, the films of Gwyneth Paltrow. So
I need to check that
that's
out.
Going on now. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So we're doing now. Yeah.
And she's always popping up.
She's always doing something dumb that we have to talk about. So
some of our best reality stars, some of our best celebrities.
Exactly.
So
we don't have to like them all the time to enjoy them as personalities.
Oh my God. Lewis, thanks so much. And we'll do this again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time. We'll